this is a test of the sound with Edith Scott on March 13, 2003. Please give me your full name, including your maiden name.
My full name is Edith Ebell Scott.
That's E-B-E-L-L?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And E-D-I-T-H.
And you were born in LeGrand?
In LeGrand.
When?
January 6, 1908.
1908.
Correct.
And I think that your grandfather was what might be called a pioneer to this part of Eastern Oregon, would he?
Definitely. Granddad followed the sea from Germany, and their ship shipwrecked right out of San Francisco. And as far as he knows, he's the only man that got to, because he was a good swimmer, he's the only man that made it to shore. And they go.
Do you have any idea what year that was approximately?
Oh, in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And at that time, the gold rush was just coming to an end in California. And some of those men were headed up toward Baker Valley.
Huh?
Because they had discovered
yes.
gold there.
Yes.
So my granddad came with those people up to Baker. And he established a post for the trail. He had at his ranch.
The Oregon Trail.
The Oregon Trail, and that was one of the stop places, was at the ranch years ago.
Did they stop there to get supplies or to rest?
Supplies and to rest. Uh-huh. And then he went on and he had a huge vegetable garden. That's what he went into. And during harvest season, he supplied all the vegetables for the city of Baker.
Mm. He didn't do any mining at all, apparently.
Apparently not. That was not his cup of tea. Mm-hmm. He could see the... And then he supplied things to the miners, mm-hmm. too.
Do you remember hearing stories directly from him?
No. Granddad was older, and he didn't share his life with his family at all.
How did you find out about what he had done?
Oh, Dad picked up some of the things. He shared enough with them, but he never shared these things with me.
Mm.
Because... He was as upset because I was a girl instead of a boy. I didn't carry the Ebell name very far. No, that was... And then, of course, we went up there on vacations all the time.
Now,
come along.
I gather that your grandfather, once he got to Baker and got this vegetable garden going, found a woman to marry.
Pardon?
That he found a woman to marry.
The thing that happened with Granddad, he was married and he had... three children, and that they called it the Black Plague, went through Baker. And he lost his wife, and two of the children had a small baby that lived, and Granddad apparently did not get it. My grandmother, whom I knew, and her sister came over from Germany to visit their brother who lived in Baker. And here were these two women who really had the equivalent of a college education. They were educated in a woman's school in Baker, in Germany. And the train only came as far as Denver. And these women from Denver had to come by stagecoach from Denver to Baker.
Why did they want to come to Baker?
To visit their brother.
Oh, I see. Their brother.
To visit their brother that was in Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And it nearly scared me to death. Here were these two really refined women. And Granddad happened to be in town and met Granny. And she was afraid to go back to Germany, so she married him. And she was a delight. I just adored my grandmother. She was just a sweetheart. And then her sister also married and stayed at Baker. So that was a fun family background thing.
But I thought you said that your grandfather's wife and children were killed by the Black Plague.
Yes.
And that's several years later?
That was following the gold rush there in Baker. I have no idea of the years.
But one of these, but the wife was the one who wasn't it
diphtheria?
Could be.
But they called it the Black Plague at that time, mm-hmm. and it killed off hundreds of people mm-hmm. All through this area.
But your father obviously survived.
He wasn't born yet.
Well, there was another wife later?
I said my grandfather married my granny when he had this one baby left from the illness.
Oh,
and then that that I call my granny had my dad and the rest of the family.
I wasn't getting the sequence, but
they
now
had
I
six children.
Okay.
My granny and granddad had six children together. Yes.
So your father grew up in Baker.
That's right.
And what brought him, or
brought
what,
him
what,
here?
What brought him to Union County?
The thing that brought my dad, just at that time, all of the hay. My granddad went in, and his dad's older brother went into raising cattle. It became a cattle ranch when the garden situation was over. And dad hated working with horses. And so he ran away from home when he was 21. And he came down here and he got a job. They were establishing the telephone lines over at Cove. And dad got a job on that. And he was, happened to see this train coming through. It was coming down from Joseph, of course, into the lumber company here. And he went down and talked to the man about it, because he loved anything that was mechanical. Dad could make anything he wanted mechanical. He was a very creative man. Anything with wood or metal, Dad could make it. And so he was talking to the man. He says, you know, we're looking for men. Dad got on the train and rode into town with him and got a job on the railroad. And it was, his dad was, stayed with the railroad till, I think he was 72. He was became a railroad engineer.
Did he start as a section hand?
No, as a fireman.
A fireman.
That's where they started as a fireman.
That was wood, of course, at that time that they were burning.
Coal.
You sure?
Coal. Uh-huh.
I've been over to Sumter and I've seen the train, the engines
the
they
little
have there, and they all still burn wood.
That's right. No, the most of it was coal at that time. Yes. And then Dad, of course, was on the freight for so many, many years, and then he became a passenger engineer. Hmm. And he was a engineer on the branch, they called it, for quite a while.
What was his first name?
Edward. Ed, they called him Ed. And he had a wonderful reputation for an engineer. I have a couple of letters that are written from the high executives complimenting him.
Did he talk much about his railroad work to you?
Well, it was just conversation around the house. And my mother was a fantastic cook. And mother and dad loved people. We had more people in and out of our house all the time. And so many of the railroaders at that time were not married men, and they'd Dad would bring them home, and it didn't make any difference what Mother was doing. Dad would bring them home, and Dad would say, so-and-so hasn't had lunch yet. Mother would stop whatever she's doing, fix lunch for all of them. Our house was an open house to people. It was a happy, happy house.
Mm-hmm. And that was on what part of LeGrand?
They're on Penn Avenue.
On Penn.
On between 6th and 7th.
Is the house still there?
Yes.
Has it been
it's
changed?
It's a little yellow house.
Has it been changed very much?
It's been changed quite a bit. It had a long porch that went clear across the front when I was growing up. And one time I came home from college and Dad had cut it down to a little porch and I was so upset. He said, I got tired of watching your mother have to keep that porch clean all the time, so I cut it down to a small porch.
Were you born in that house?
No, I was born over on T Street.
Why there?
Well, that's where I was born. They used to deliver babies in the homes instead of hospital.
Yeah. But
so they were renting a house over on T Street.
Before they got the one on Penn.
Yeah, and they bought the house there on Penn when I was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So that's the only house I remember.
Do you remember hearing from your mother anything about your birth, the circumstances?
It was horrible. That's why I'm an only child.
Why was it horrible? So,
well, it was so hard on mother.
Without an anesthetic?
Oh, I'm sure. Well, heavens no, they didn't use anesthetics then for them. No, it was a miserable birth for mother. And there were never any more children.
Never again, she said.
No, they just decided that was it.
Mm-hmm. So did you move into the house on Penn before you had entered school?
I said I was 3 years old.
Three.
When they bought it. So that's been home to me all the time.
Sure.
And then you see I came up the hill to Central School and then high school.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me from your memory as early as possible how Central School looked and felt to you?
Oh, I thought it was wonderful. It was a brick building, and I can't remember. It was at least two stories, and I haven't any pictures of Central School.
I have a
Isn't
picture.
Isn't it three stories?
I think so.
I think it was three stories.
I thought it was stone rather than brick, though.
And then the high school was three-cornered. Yeah, it was brick.
Okay.
The grade school was brick, and so was the high school.
Okay.
And the high school had been three stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then the top story burned. That was while I was away from LeGrand.
As a young child, you remember that Central School was an inviting place?
Well, school was fun. I loved it. And did you ever meet Dr. Engel, the two Dr. Engels?
No, I've heard a lot about them, but not.
Well,
I didn't
Dr. Engel's mother was my first grade teacher, and she was a love. We all just adored her.
Sure.
No, yep. And see, the college wasn't built then, of course, so that was all open field. And none of these houses were up here. When I was growing up, or as a kid, in the spring, we'd come up here and pick buttercups in the field here.
There were buttercups here when I first came to LeGrand. I remember them well.
Yeah, they're so pretty.
Yes. Could you tell me a little more about being a young student at Central School? Any of the routines that you remember or interactions with teachers or other kids?
No, it was a happy time. The kids, there weren't any problems like the kids have now. It went very smoothly. Now, first, the Catholic children, the grade school children, went to a Catholic school and then came over to the high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we met them when they came to the high school. And the grade school, and then the winters were such fun because, of course, the college wasn't up on the hill, and they always closed 6th Street for sledding.
Mm-hmm.
And the White House is at the top of 6th Street, the two-story White House.
Mm-hmm.
That belonged to a family who were railroaders also. His name were Beatty, and Vera and Howard Beatty were the children. And Mrs. Beatty was just a love. And the ones of us that knew Howard and Vera, Mrs. Beatty would invite us in, the ones that they knew, come go in, or sometimes she'd have hot chili for us, hot chocolate always. But 6th Street Hill, that's where everybody did sledding. It was lots of fun. And then, at that time, Palmer Mill was still very active, which was out near the fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to take the logs out in the fall, and we'd ice skate out there in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kind of the memories of the wintertime.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, I say, Dad and Mom, we would take off on fishing trips and lots of fishing trips, like up to Anthony Lake and that area, because we'd visit the relatives in the Baker area. We would be up all around Anthony Lake fishing, or down on the Minum and all of that. So the summertime, I was always, when Dad was home, we were out in the woods someplace.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't circulating with the kids in town.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the Mormon Church was down where the Observer office is now.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a wonderful social hall behind that. And all of the young people there, they were very active, and they had lots of fun down there in that social hall. They would, after school, so many of those young people would go down to the to their Mormon social hall.
Mm-hmm.
And they had dance classes and all. And then the YMCA was here.
Yes.
And all of us learned to swim down there as youngsters. And that's kind of the activity that went on.
Right. Did you regularly walk to school, even from your earliest years?
Always. And then in grade school, the ones where I live, of course, it was downhill, we all roller skated to school, and then we would coast clear down, jump the curbs, and go home on our roller skates. And I went home for lunch every day, of course. And I say I became... Because of the church being so close and Mother being active, I became very active with the young people in the church. They had, the young people group then was called the Christian Endeavors. And that was a large organization. And see, at that time, have you met Lee Johnson?
No, but I'm.
You must meet Lee. But Lee's family were active, and then George Fleshman, have you talked to George?
Yes.
George Fleshman's family were very active in the community, or in the church. That was a church group. And then, not the Conleys from Cove, but there was a Conley family here, and Lois DeLong was a Conley, and her family were very active. And see, it's Lois's son, isn't it? The mayor out at Island City?
I think so.
Yes, but their background is a Conley family that was out in the valley.
Right.
And those were people. And then I grew up across the street, of course, from Pat Fitzgerald, that had the florist shop.
Sure.
Of course.
I have interviewed him.
Pat's great. He's the baby of the family. He's the only one left of that big family. But they lived in that White House on the corner of Penn and 6th. Mm-hmm. But he had the two brothers and a sister.
Mm-hmm.
But Pat was the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there. And then on 6th Street, where the wrought iron fence is around, that the lawyer has now.
Dale Mammon.
Dale Mammon has. That superintendent of the railroad lived in there for a long time. And then right next door was Hilda Anthony, who taught piano lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And I took piano lessons from Hilda.
Mm-hmm.
She used to scare me to death.
She was fairly demanding, wasn't she?
Very demanding, and she had such a strange way of teaching. I guess they taught piano at that time that way, because I took lessons, I think, for around 8 years. She would play a piece of music for you, and then you had to learn the right hand, and then you learned the left hand, then you put them together, and you learn about two lines together. We never learned to read music. It was all memory. She was quite a gal.
Mm-hmm. Why did you stick with piano lessons for so long?
Well, I had my Uncle Pete Beaver and mother's sister and husband, and Uncle Pete played in the LeGrand band, and he felt music was very important, and Uncle Pete felt that I should keep doing music. I enjoyed it. What I was doing, it was something to do.
Mm-hmm. Did you perform?
Oh, always at recitals.
Uh-huh.
Oh, of course.
And where were the recitals?
At Hilda's house, in the house.
Uh-huh. Never at the Le Grand Hotel?
No.
Or the Sacagawea?
No, it was always. That was before it was built.
Hmm.
Le Grand Hotel wasn't built, and the Sacagawea wasn't built yet.
Do you remember how you felt about these recitals?
Well, it was just something else to do.
And you were nervous?
No, it never bothered me, and I knew my music, and that was all I was doing.
I've
always been a bit independent person, and very confident in what I can do. I think my dad taught me that. Dad's attitude was, of course you can do it. Try it.
There's no shame in failure.
No shame in failure at all. Dad said, I'd say, oh, something, and Dad said, well, try it.
Mm-hmm.
He never... He encouraged me and everything, but he had a natural instinct, no training at all, but he could make anything out of wood or metal that he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He even made his own screws and bolts sometimes, just because he enjoyed it. He had a fantastic shop down in the basement of the house.
During your early school years, did you wander around Le Grand much, down by the railroad or along the business district?
Of course, we would go downtown. We had two movie theaters then. We'd go to the Saturday afternoon matinees.
Mm-hmm.
We'd do that, and I'd go downtown to shop for Mother to buy things for her.
What about the railroad yards?
No way.
We weren't allowed to go over there?
No way.
Why?
Dad just didn't approve of that.
Did you think it was dangerous?
He just didn't think that's where girls belong.
Too many men around who might have some dangerous ideas?
Men didn't have those ideas, and at least if they did, it was under the carpet. It was never published or anything like that. No, women had their place and men had their place in those days.
Mm-hmm. Did that seem perfectly normal to you at the time?
I never questioned it.
Not like
never questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
You didn't feel as though you were being put down?
No, No, not at all. And of course, it surprises me so now because all of these women that are bowling, that was a man's thing when I was growing up. Women never went near the bowling alley. So the world has changed.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Were there any overt ways in which females were taught their place, or was it just by seeing what other people did?
I don't think, I was not conscious of it, I guess. Of course, there were women that were secretaries of for the different offices, for the business people and all. See, Lee Johnson's sister was a legal secretary. I don't remember whether she was with Lawyer Hill or with Eberhardt. I don't remember. Lee, of course, would know. Lee Johnson. But his sister, I know, was the legal secretary, and I admired her, so she was a delightful woman.
Can you remember specifically what it was like to go to a matinee at one of the theaters?
It was always then, you see, it was before when I was going to matinees then. We didn't have any voices on it.
Silent pictures.
It was silent.
Wasn't there someone who had played the piano?
Well, I was going to say, and the piano player,
yes.
And I love that piano player. With that, and those, and the cereals were always on Saturday. I didn't go every Saturday. I wasn't allowed to go that much to the theater. But I know when some of us would go. But I was always, if Dad was home, I was doing things with Dad. And when Dad was gone, I was doing things with Mother, or whatever I was doing, practicing the piano.
Did you go to the movies usually with a bunch of other girls?
Generally a bunch of girls.
Where did you get the money to go?
It was given to us by our parents.
Did you have an allowance, or you just
I never had, I always wanted an allowance. Most of my friends had allowance, and Dad said if I needed money, I just had to tell him what I needed it for.
Yeah.
He didn't approve of it. And of course, to me, it's a mistake not to have a child on an allowance, because money didn't mean that much to me. I always had a good excuse.
Mm-hmm.
So I was never... when I needed money, all I'd do was ask for it. Got it.
I wonder if, as you look back on your childhood, you think that you were pampered.
I was pampered a great deal, I think, as an only child. But I never felt I was spoiled.
Did you have jobs you had to do around the house?
Take care of my own room. But... Mother and Dad had, as children, had had a pretty hard life of working and all, and I think they didn't want me to have that as a child. They wanted me to have a happy childhood. So I really was not, I don't remember ever being requested to do things. One thing I remember I always did in the summertime, Dad always had the most gorgeous sweet peas along the driveway there at the house. That was my job, to keep the sweet peas picked, because if you didn't, they wouldn't bloom.
Right.
Oh, those stems like that, these great big blossoms of those sweet peas. And that, things like that's all I had to do.
How did you get your clothing?
Mother made most of my clothes. Dresses and things like that. And
did
the rest were bought at the store. See, we had, NK West was a wonderful department store here in those years. Downtown.
Why was it so good?
It had everything in it. And it had everything anybody'd want. And of course, people did not demand the clothes like they do now.
Was
but Mother made all of my dresses.
Was it strictly a clothing store?
General merchandise, men and women. So they could, women could buy yardage there and thread and things like that. And then they had one department that they catered to the railroaders. And then when trotters came in, they catered to the mill people and the railroaders.
It was called Trotter's Men's Store, wasn't
it? Yes, when it first opened. But they were wonderful to the working men.
What do you remember about the prices at NK West?
Never paid any attention to it.
You didn't ever have to
I never had
money.
To think about that.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think about what things cost.
Would you and your mother make trips in to select yardage for a dress that she'd make for you?
Oh, definitely, and I could pick out the patterns and mother made them. But mother made all of my clothes.
What kind of a sewing machine did she have?
She had my one granddaughter has mother's sewing machine. It was a treadle sewing machine.
Singer?
Pardon?
A Singer?
No, it was called a Honeymoon.
A Honeymoon?
It was, and it had it. The paint and all on it is of course all metal, and all of the fancy decorations are still on it.
You still, it still exists?
Yeah, one of my granddaughters has it.
Really? Does she use it?
She has it sitting in the corner of her living room.
Huh. Good.
But, no, it was called a Honeymoon. And I think it was made by Sears, if I'm not mistaken. I think Mother told me that it was a Sears product. But Honeymoon in gold letters on it. And it's the shuttle kind for the bobbin. Little long shuttle. But I say it's treadle.
What kind of a sound did it make?
There's not much of a sound to it.
Just a little gentle hum?
Well, if you pedal real fast.
Did you learn to use it also?
Oh, I sewed on it all the time till I had an electric sewing machine when I was home. Because mother, I did a lot of sewing. I loved dolls as a child, and I made all of the doll clothes and things like that. And then I ended up making all the clothes for my two daughters when they were growing up.
Do you remember in your childhood that the house had electricity?
Oh, we always had electricity.
And indoor plumbing?
Not when I was tiny. My memory of growing up, we did have indoor plumbing. But when I was tiny, Mother talked about that they were so pleased when they put the plumbing in the house. But I do not remember going out to the back, to the toilet or anything like that. I only remember the plumbing in the house. No, we had electricity. That was a thing with my granddad. He was very progressive. He was, in fact, I have the certificate over there, the number one certificate for the telephone out in the Valley of Baker. I have that certificate. And then he had it was called a Delco plant. And out in the shed behind the house were all of these glass containers that held the cells for the batteries. So even when I was little, they had electricity up at the ranch. It was great. Granny had electric lights, and she had an electric vacuum cleaner. No, it was great.
Yes. There were automobiles, of course, from your earliest childhood.
Yes, there were. The first car that we had was called a Dodge. It was an open, you know, the top that you could put down and put the side curtains on that you can't see out. That was the first car we had. And then I learned to drive the Dodge, and then Dad bought a car that was called a King 8, and it was a sports car. I loved that car. It's just a shame we never kept it, because it had the big wooden wheels, or, you know, the instead of the metal bars, and it had bucket seats, and it was brown leather inside and red on the outside, and the top would go down. It had side curtains too, but it was a King 8. It was called because it had a V8 engine in it. You could climb a telephone post with that thing. So
it took the hills around here pretty well.
Oh heavens, yes, and at high speed. And so I always, I don't remember not being able to drive till now with my eyes. I can't drive anymore. But I always had the use of the car. Mother never learned to drive. But I was never, I could always, and I don't know how many I taught to drive. I taught so many of my girlfriends to drive.
Did your father teach you?
Dad taught me. Mm-hmm. And I don't even recall how many I've taught to drive.
The streets in La Grande at that time, what were they like?
Well, of course, there were a lot more streets than there were then.
But I mean the main streets, like Adams Avenue and Washington, Jefferson.
They were all paved as far as I remember. I don't remember being any dirt roads down there any place.
some of the people I've talked to, older people, say that they came in from farms out in the valley in the horse and buggy, and that they recalled that the streets were dirt and that there were board sidewalks. Was that before you knew downtown LaGrande?
You know, I don't remember. Some people have talked about that, but I do not remember Burton. I guess I didn't pay that much attention to it. That didn't stick. It wasn't important, apparently, in my mind. And they did come out with, and then, of course, Ironstone Mary that they're going to put up again.
Cast iron.
Cast iron Mary, yes, when they put her up.
You remember seeing her?
Oh, heavens, yes. And see, she was put up by, that woman's group that are against
women's liquor. Women's Temperance Union.
There were water troughs for the horses around the base of it.
Wasn't there a fountain for people, too?
Yes, I think there was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I remember those trays for the horses.
You remember being up close to it?
Oh, heavens, I went by it a lot.
Yes.
And another thing that we had here that I just loved, on Sunday afternoons, down where the bank is now, they're on the little square.
Credit Union?
The Credit Union. Mm-hmm. That was a little park, and it had a gazebo in it. And every Sunday afternoon, our band would play concerts down there. I used to always walk down from the house to listen to the concert. Yeah. It was wonderful.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, people didn't travel away from LaGrande as much.
They were around town.
So there was more activity.
Yes,
everywhere.
Right in town. Yes. Now, my Uncle Pete Beaver played the clarinet in the local band, and then he went on and played, and then he became a Shriner, and he played in the Shrine Band from Portland. He used to go down, and and Uncle Pete made several trips with the Shriners with the band cross country when they'd had their national convention.
Now, this was a town band made up entirely of men, and they all had full-time jobs doing something
jobs.
Else.
No, they were, and they all liked to. Lindsay was there. His name was Lindsay.
Dick Lindsay?
Yes, he was the leader.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a wonder. But I say every Sunday afternoon they had the men that were in town that weren't out on the railroad.
Do you remember any of the music they played? Was it all marches?
Oh, no. It was, a lot of it was classical music. No, it was great.
How much of a crowd would come usually on Sunday afternoons?
Oh, people would be parked in the yard. People would sit down on the lawn down there. They were all around down there.
Maybe 200 or 300?
Oh, no.
Not that many?
Maybe 50 to 75 or something like that.
A range of ages?
From little kids up to seniors that enjoyed music.
Do you think that high school kids came to events like that?
Probably some, but not many. Mm-hmm. And then you see at that time, too, the Elk Building, it was three stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they had apartments upstairs till it burned.
And a swimming pool in the basement.
That's right.
Yeah.
And see, as I say, we had the swimming pool in the YMCA where most of us learned to swim.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite stores besides NK West to go in when you were young?
I wasn't a store person. I wasn't a shopper or anything like that. When I needed something, and I'd go get it, or mother'd get it. But kids didn't. I don't remember any of us. I think most of our mothers made our dresses when I was a kid.
Well, kids sometimes are interested in candy or ice cream or things
sure,
like
we
that.
Had the ice cream parlors, and. And then, of course, the ice cream wagon went through town all the time.
Like the Joe's wagon that goes through now?
Yes, but they always had ice cream cones and things like that.
Oh. Was that a motorized vehicle or a horse and wagon?
Originally, it was a horse and wagon. And then, way back, the ice wagon, of course, went around town all the time, delivering ice to people.
Right. And kids, I understand, would follow that and get the little slivers of ice
that
fell off.
Definitely. There, that happened. You've heard that story, too.
Well, I've heard
You've heard both of the stories, I think.
Well, I always like to get your version of them, though. Do you remember, every place has crime of some kind, whether it's petty thievery or worse. Now, of course, most of these things are reported daily in the Observer.
Never reported.
Were you aware of
no.
any kind of criminal activity?
No.
Not at all?
No, the only thing I remember was when they had the Chinatown, when the Chinatown was still down there where the Le Grand Hotel was built,
mm-hmm.
when they had a gang war once, mm-hmm. and we all thought it was kind of funny. But
it did.
And then, of course, it was fun when the circus came to town, too.
That shooting on the post office steps occurred, as I recall, in 1917.
Yeah.
And you would have been, what, 11 or 10?
Yes.
Or thereabouts? Maybe 9.
Yeah.
Did you think 1908 you were born?
1908.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you were 9 years old. But why did you think that the gang wars were funny?
Well, we just didn't take those things very seriously, I don't think.
Well,
right?
What was your attitude toward the Chinese then?
They were fine. It didn't bother me any.
But if they were engaged in what seemed to be serious, possibly lethal activity, why was that funny?
Well, it was just something that didn't happen around town very much, I guess.
Funny odd, then, rather than
yes,
funny humor?
Yes, funny odd.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was strange to have something like that happen in our town.
I know that there were a number of Chinese in Le Grand who sold vegetables and had laundries and
laundry.
That sort of thing. Did you have any direct knowledge of them?
No, because Mother did all of her own laundry.
Mm-hmm. But no other reason to interact with any.
No.
But most of the Chinese, I think, didn't speak very much English.
No, but see, I wasn't around them. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember having... I don't remember any of the Chinese children in our school. I remember the first time that we had one black man came into high school, and we were all just floored because there were no black people around Le Grand at that time.
You mean in the 1910 to 20 period?
Yes, there were no black people around. In fact, I think Dad has told me in later years that any of them that came to town, most of them, they got ran off. They wouldn't let them stay over 20. They wouldn't let them stay overnight. The police would make them leave town.
Mm.
But that's something that shouldn't be published, I don't think.
Well, it's a fact, though.
Yeah, it's a fact that happened.
In 1922 through 1924, the Ku Klux Klan was active around here, marching around in their white robes and burning crosses on Table Mountain occasionally.
Yes.
Were you aware of any of that activity?
I was aware of it because Mother and Dad were very upset because for some reason or another, Dad's name got on the list and he was not involved with it at all. I know that.
On the list as invited to become a member?
I don't know whether he was invited or what, but one of Mother's close friends wouldn't speak to Mother because she thought my dad had joined the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother was so hurt, and I can remember this, the conversation between Mother and Dad, and Dad had no part of it at all.
How might she have gotten that impression about him, his joining their organization? Do you have any idea?
No, I don't think I was really, I didn't know that much about it. I wasn't that interested in it. I think young people, when I was young, we were much more interested in our own little group, and we could be cared less what was on the other side of the fence. I don't think any of us were particularly interested in the politics. We didn't have the radio. We didn't have television. And I don't think many of us read the newspapers. We had current events that we read in school. That was part of economic class or
civics, probably.
Civics could have been. That was that. Where did that supply and demand that we were taught go to? Certainly don't practice that anymore.
What do you mean by that?
Well, remember in our civics classes, that was such a point. Everything was set on supply and demand.
That's the rule of the American economy.
Yeah, but not anymore. It's really turned around. But, no, I don't think we weren't as conscious of what was going on in the world.
Did you ever see any of the men dressed up in their white outfits?
No, I never did.
Did you never see one of the crosses burning?
Well, we saw the crosses occasionally.
What did?
And I'm very concerned about it. Mother and Dad were very concerned about it. I know they were not in favor of it at all.
What did it mean to them?
I don't know.
What did it mean to you?
I don't think I even thought about it.
Well, it was bizarre, wasn't it?
Well, it would be, yes.
Yeah.
Do
you remember asking yourself, why are they doing this?
Well, of course, I wondered why.
You never found out?
No. Because we didn't have the black people here.
Well, it wasn't just black people that they were bothered with. They didn't think much of Catholics.
No.
And there were a number of other kinds of people that they didn't have much use for. They thought that they were living by pure American principles, and that excluded a great many people and ideas.
This is true. No, that was not part of my life at all. And then my daughter Susie, who's living here with me now, she picked up that book about the Ku Klux Klan in LeGrand, and she was going through, and I could not believe some of the people that I knew growing up, their names were in there that were active in it.
You mentioned earlier the name Eberhard.
Yes.
He was
active in it, apparently.
Yes, he was one of the leaders.
Uh-huh.
And I believe it was in his office that the minutes of the meetings were found.
I think that's what the book said.
Mm-hmm.
No, Susie was laughing about it, we were going through, and I just can't believe this.
When you got to high school, did your view of life in LeGrand change in some ways?
No.
Just went on to a higher grade
in the next building over. And I think life became course active. I did not, I think, two or three of the plays I was in. But mostly I was interested in preparing and building and painting the stage pieces. I was always interested in that. When they were having plays.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you before, Wes Brown was in my class. Now, he was one of our, I don't know if he was president or vice president of the senior class.
When did you graduate from LeGrand High School?
26.
26.
Uh-huh.
So you were there from 22 to 26.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the plays, the names of the plays?
Oh, heavens. I'd have to go back and get the old memers out.
I ask that because a number of years ago, many of the high school plays that were put on were pretty light, trivial.
Oh, most of these
things.
Were, too.
Yeah. Meant to be comic entirely.
Have you ever seen any of our old memers?
Yes.
Yeah.
But tell me about your work with the memer.
Marge Warnick was her name. Her dad was a sheriff here. And they lived in the house just beyond the Beatty's lived in. And that house was destroyed when they built that the parking lot up there. Now, of course, the new science building is coming in that direction. But Marge and I did all of the artwork, and all of us in our memer.
Which included...
Oh, getting the letters together and the design around the pictures and all of that.
How much time did you spend on the memer, during your recall? Several weeks of after school?
Oh, yes. And we always, which I feel sorry for the kids now, our memers were always published, so on the last day of school we got them. And we could go around and they're all, had everybody autograph or write something in the back of them. And see, they don't do that now anymore.
No. What's your memory of how it happened to be called a memer?
I don't know. I never questioned it.
It's a strange word, isn't it?
Yes, but I don't know where the memer came from, now that you've mentioned it. I just accepted it.
Do you still have your copies?
I have all four.
For you?
Uh-huh.
I'll bet there's some photographs in there that would be of interest to others.
There probably are. You say you've seen them.
I've seen some from a later period, the 40s.
Well, let me go. I'll bring them up. If you like.
We're talking about Lee Johnson now.
Yes, and he had... you don't need that on the tape. He never was a railroader. None of the family was in it, but he was very interested in it. So he has a lot of history.
Yes, I'm sure he does. He was in high school with you.
No, he's younger. He was a professor over at the college.
I know.
Yes.
And he taught at the high school.
Yes, but I knew him. In fact, Lee and George Fleshman, I had him in a Sunday school class at the church.
I'd like to hear more about activities at the high school. You said you were interested in set production.
Yes.
And you worked on the Niemer staff. Was that just 1 year or several years?
Probably my junior and senior years I was doing, but all through high school I was involved with mm-hmm. the drama department. I was never interested in participating in the drama mm-hmm. department. I think I had a part one time. But I was much more interested in what was going on backstage mm-hmm. and helping with costuming and that type of thing. We did all, made all of our costumes mm-hmm. and all. And then, as I told you, we had the ones of us who were in the home ec department that we did all of the work for the banquets and all for the at the end of the school year for the different sports events.
Uh-huh. The awards banquets?
Yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. About the Niemer, how did you, or what, how much time did you spend putting out a Niemer during the year, and when did you do the work?
After school. Stay after school.
For an hour or two after school?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And
or go early in the morning sometimes. See, the one of the professors would kind of oversee it.
One of the teachers.
One of the teachers.
As an advisor.
Yes, as an advisor. They were generally the advisor that we worked with.
Did you start work on it in January or February?
I think we kind of worked on it practically all year.
We did.
Uh-huh. Collecting pictures and getting it all together.
Even with an advisor, the students have considerable involvement in making decisions?
Oh, definitely. I think so. It always went very smooth as far as I remember.
How did you learn how to do it? Just by the
natural,
experience?
I can't, by instinct, I guess.
Was there any sort of master plan that you were working from?
No, we had the pictures of the seniors, and the story, each senior has a story about themselves, mm-hmm. and then the drama department and the athletes had a department, and then we had odds and ends of pictures in the back of caught it off at different times. Mm-hmm. That was about it.
Each issue had a lot of advertising, didn't it? Someone had to go around to all the businesses in town.
Somebody did that, but I never got involved with that. I didn't have to get the advertising.
Were you involved with the layout?
Helping with the layout. Uh-huh. Well, that's when Marge and I did most of that. Uh-huh. Put the pictures where they belonged and all of that.
Was this a paste-up operation?
Yes, quite a bit of it. And I don't remember who published it. I don't know if that's in the front of the Niemer or not.
I think it probably was published either at Palmer Printing or out or elsewhere.
Yes, it probably was Palmer's. I don't know.
It doesn't seem to have a credit line here for a publisher.
We didn't give people credits those days.
How much did it cost proportionately? Would it correspond now to $10, maybe, do you think?
Oh, I wish I could tell you that one. I can't answer that.
I was wondering whether some students might not have had enough money to buy a copy.
A few students were never interested in buying one. I might say that. Whether they could afford it or not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that never entered my mind on those things. Mm-hmm. I never felt they have a lot more money than I do, and they don't have as much money. I never felt it a class thing in there at all. I was never conscious of that.
You bring up the word class again. Tell me, this is diverging from the high school, but I think you said that from a fairly early age you were aware that business people and railroad and mill workers were in separate classes.
Definitely.
Tell me about how you became aware of that and what the effect was.
You felt it. It's, for instance, I was amazed when I came back after being away that railroaders were belonged to the country club. No way was they'd ever been invited to the country club when I was growing up.
Suppose one had wanted to join, what would have happened?
I have no idea. And see, the original country club, when I was growing up, the big swimming pool was up where the weight station is now. Mm-hmm. You come
Pine
up and ferry.
Pine Cone?
Yeah, and Pine Cone Swimming Pool. And then on the hill across is where the country club was. That the original one.
I think you can still see the foundation of one of the buildings.
It could be.
Did
but
you
it's on up, that side hill. It was just
did,
a cut.
Did you go up there at all?
No. No. I was a railroader brat.
But and this country club,
I would have been invited.
This country club, did you think that the members were exclusively from the business and professional
definitely.
Group?
Definitely. Always. Yes. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And did your father ever say anything about wishing that he could be included?
No, no. He was not. Dad was a down-to-earth man. He was a hunter and a fisherman, and he was a real he-man. But he had a heart of gold. And I have been told since, and I did not know it when I was here, but several have told me that when men were coming to work on the railroad, starting, and Dad was still, if he felt they were really interested in learning the ropes, he would bend over backwards to help them. But if he felt that all they were interested in the salary they were going to get, he wouldn't help them. He loved the railroad so much that it was his life. And he was darn good at it. In fact, they said no one ever had to go get Dad if he had a breakdown or anything. He fixed it. They never had to go get one of Dad's trains. He always got them back to the roundhouse. And that's a crime they ever did away with that crop. That would have been the most wonderful visitor's attraction,
yeah.
That roundhouse over
yes.
there.
Yes. You never actually saw it up close.
Oh, the roundup, sure. Dad took me over there every once
no,
in a while.
No, I mean the roundhouse.
Oh, sure. Dad took me over there once in a while. Oh. But I mean, I did not wander over to the around that area at all.
Okay. Back to this class difference thing.
It was a class difference.
Yeah, you apparently didn't ask many questions about it yourself at the time.
It was just a normal thing. You just accepted it.
And were you aware of it partly because of the way people dressed, the men particularly? Or did most of the business people
wear...
It was
the attitude. It was the attitude of people.
I'm curious to know, how could you detect that?
Well, it's just like some of the women that were the bridge players in the high society of the 400, quote.
Yes.
The way they would talk to mother and all, it was, I had a different feeling.
A little bit condescending, perhaps?
A little bit, yes. And my mother was a fantastic woman. She was sweet and darling as they come. But now, the railroad women, the engineers, the women had their own little meeting that they met, too. It was called the GAR, I think. And they had meetings, but the neighborhood club women, that was entirely two different worlds, entirely. And see, the neighborhood club that's there on N Avenue, no, at 6th,
yes.
It's there in that corner.
Yes.
That used to be the clubhouse for the men that was over by the depot.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved it over here.
Yeah, I heard about that.
You heard that one too.
Oh, yes.
You probably heard all the stories. I'm not giving you any new information.
Well, I like hearing them from you. I asked about clothing. Didn't most of the men in the businesses wear suits,
oh,
white shirts,
yes.
and ties
uh-huh.
all the time?
Definitely.
And they kept their shoes shine?
Oh, definitely.
Yes. And I suppose not many of the railroad men did that, except maybe the executives.
The executives were always in suits, of course. But
were the railroad executives part of the other class?
Definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But not like, Dad wore the bib overalls, the blue and white stripe, of course. And my mother, they were just spotless and starch stiff. that Dad was always so clean.
He must have
And a lot of the railroaders, the engineers took pride in the way they looked. And the way I see these men now, I just cringe. They look just awful.
He must have had several sets of overalls.
Oh, definitely. But Mother would wash those things. And she even went so far as making soap up at the ranch with lye in it so that she'd get all of those stains out of them. No, she was...
And she was doing this on a washboard?
We had a... originally, I'm sure, when I was little, she had to do it on a washboard. But later on, Mother had a automatic, it was powered by water. She'd hook it up to the faucet in the kitchen, and the water would run the washing machine. And then she'd drain it out into Dad's garden. Dad always had a beautiful garden out in the backyard, and with flowers too. And so she'd run the water. When she'd empty the tub, she had a hose she'd attach to it and go out in the yard.
I guess that meant that all of her washing was done with cold water.
No, she heated it on the stove and poured it into the washing machine with the soap.
Oh. When you said
to start it.
I see.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cold water was for the rinse?
Yes.
Uh-huh. She made the soap all the time? Did she ever?
Not all the time, but when Dad's overhauls. She'd make some of that soap up at the ranch. Now, we used regular soap out of the grocery store. Mm-hmm. But some of that, for real hard stains, Mother loved that homemade soap up at the ranch. Gran and Mother would make that. And Dad's sisters, they'd all make a batch of soap.
Is it your opinion, then, that this class divide that existed between railroad and mill workers and business and professional people was simply accepted by everyone without resentment?
It seemed to be. It just seemed to be kind of a normal thing. No one seemed to question it at all.
And you didn't ever detect jealousy on one side or the other?
No.
I suppose most of
it was just life.
Yeah.
In a small town. Mm-hmm.
Probably like life in many other small towns. Yeah. I don't think Le Grand was unique in that way.
No, I don't think so either. Mm-hmm. But the business people were always just a little, and their families were always, they were always maybe dressed a little better, yeah. And lived in a little better neighborhood maybe, or not, I don't know.
Where did farmers and ranchers fit into this social class scheme?
Isn't that strange? I have no idea. I think they were out in the granges. I don't think they came into town to shop a lot, I suppose, but they weren't part of the community.
I think they came in on Saturdays, maybe.
Probably.
And left fairly quickly.
Uh-huh. But they were not a part of the town.
Yeah. And people in Cove and Elgin?
They lived their own life out there.
It was completely separate?
Separate, entirely.
Did you ever visit any of those places when you were in your
teens? No, because I didn't know anybody out there.
You said you drove the car. Couldn't you drive out to Elgin or Cove?
There was no reason.
I see. No friends.
No, because they were all here in town.
All the teenagers, of course, went to high schools in those towns. So
yes,
maybe
but they kept their... And I don't remember when we had basketball games or football games or anything. But we went to Baker, I know, a time or two, and to Pendleton, but I don't remember the Cove and Elgin and all those getting involved.
Others have told me that it was primarily the cheerleaders who traveled with the teens.
That could have happened. That I don't know, because I was never a cheerleader.
The Christian church that you were involved with from early years, and you mentioned Christian Endeavors.
Yes.
And you mentioned teaching Sunday school.
Yes.
Did you start doing that when you were in high school?
I think I was only a freshman in high school, or maybe an eighth grader. I had no more business teaching Sunday school classes, anything.
What did you do? Do you remember?
Probably just played with the kids to keep them quiet while the parents were in church. That's probably what happened.
It's babysitting.
Kind of a babysitting job, I really think, is what it amounted to. But George Flesh would every once in a while would say something. My Sunday school teacher, because there isn't that much age difference, really.
He's in his late 70s.
George is probably George must be getting close to 80, isn't he now?
Close, yeah, close.
I think so.
About the beliefs in the church, how did you have exposure to what Christian theology is?
Well, I think I went along with Mother, and I was involved with the Sunday school class, and I say the Christian Endeavor and that. But it was a group that I was with. But as far as diagnosing the religion, that never entered my mind. I never thought about comparing it with the Episcopalians or the Catholics or anybody else. It's just where I went. I went to Sunday school and church with Mother. I guess I just, those things I just didn't ever analyze particularly. I was more interested in what I'm going to do tomorrow, if I'm going to a birthday party or if I'm going to have a new dress made or something like that.
But you were considered to be a trusted member of the church?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And then those women, they would have potluck dinners down, and I can remember they'd be over at my mother's house, and they were all making homemade noodles out in the kitchen. The kitchen would be full of homemade noodles that my mother had made for a potluck for chicken and noodles or something. They'd have over at the basement of the church there when it was on there on Penn Avenue. It was strange. The church, you came up to the corner of Penn and 7th to get into it. You could walk up the steps on Penn, or you could walk up the steps on 7th to get into the church.
Is that a different building?